Welcome to Broken Shovel, Homesteading for a Sustainable Future. Date of release is 3/19. And Eric covers his face. Welcome to Broken Shovel, Homesteading for a Sustainable Future. Date of release is 3/19. Today we will be talking about the EPA, or if you're Grandpa System, Grandpa Simpson, EPA. As always, my name is Lucas, and I am joined by my friend and co-host,
Eric.
Hey, Eric. How are you today?
We are here today.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. We'll talk a little bit about that later on.
We'll talk about it later on at the end of the homesteading stuff.
Yeah. Eric's had a rough morning. Rough few days.
Rough weekend.
Rough weekend, yeah. So, yeah, so today we're talking about the EPA. Eric's going to kind of run this one today. I've got some notes about their activities here in Vermont. You know, it's spring, so we're really going to start talking about the homesteads a lot more, as well as covering these important topics. But, yeah, we're definitely getting into it now. Spring is here. I am so excited. I got caught in freezing rain this morning walking the dog. And now it's like gloriously sunny outside, and I'm stuck inside talking to you.
I can't do anything right now because everything is swampland.
Yeah.
So I can look at it. It's like, oh, look, there's no snow. All right, 3 more weeks until I can do anything. Because, yeah, I mean, it's the rain, the snow, I was walking the dog on Friday or yesterday and just walking around, the lawn, and just, every step would just be, I'd step and it'd just be, water would pool up. My lawn, that's the thing, I just have a very wet lawn, which one of the things we'll talk more about when we get to our homestead section.
Yes, I'm really excited about that part. Okay, so yeah, let's talk about the EPA. The EPA is the government agency, the Environmental Protection Agency. It was founded in 1970.
It was passed to be created in 69, and then Nixon officially established it in December of 1970. Because, yeah, it was originally that Congress and Senate passed the National Environment Policy Act in 69, which laid the framework for the creation of the EPA. And this was done after things like Silent Spring was published by Rachel Carson.
Okay.
Who very alerted the public to how terrible pesticides were.
And we talked about that book before when we've been talking about, you know, forever chemicals and
forever chemicals, insects, and when we talked about pesticides. So we've hit on this at least three times.
Nothing's going to stop us from grinding this into people's brains, though.
And yeah, so the big thing that what the establishment of the actual EPA did was it took all these little environmental programs and groups that were in other departments and brought them all under one umbrella of the EPA.
A largely very positive move.
Yes, a positive move. The first major case it brought up was the Cuyahoga River burning, which was one of many major river fires that occurred in the 1960s.
That was in Ohio?
Yeah, this is Ohio. So the EPA charged Jones and Laughlin Steel Corp for dumping huge amounts of cyanide and other chemicals in the river, and then which in turn caused the river to literally catch on fire.
Was it like a spontaneous, or did, was there?
Yeah, I think it was a barge, a spark off of a barge or riverboat caused it.
Yeah, that'll happen. An engine passing by. And...
Yep.
Gosh, and then shortly
after that, the Congress and Senate passed the Clean Water Act of 72. The EPA kind of wrote the framework for that. And a lot of what the early days of the EPA were just writing framework policies, recommendations, and some justice cases of going after large polluters / environmental impactors.
Yeah, so your tire fires and
Tire
such.
fires, your dumps were very bad at that time for having chemicals and leaking chemicals into waterways.
There was a lot of problems with like gas stations too.
Yes.
There was no, I mean, the tanks were so rudimentary
I
and
mean, the tanks were a problem until the 90s when they finally really got serious about finding and just shutting down gas stations.
yeah.
I remember in the 90s just seeing like all these stations around this area that got shut down because they had the old style tanks that were leaky and et cetera.
Yeah, and that could have even been because I remember that happening slightly earlier than that, in different areas. But I think, the EPA is an agency that's spread pretty thin, and
It
if
is
you
very
know.
spread very thin, and there's a reason for that. There was two more major acts kind of frameworked by the EPA from the 70s. For the other one was the Clean Water Act, Safe Water, Drinking Water Act, and then the Toxic Substance Control Act were the three major passages that the EPA did in the 70s. Early 80s, before Reagan was elected, they officially established Superfund sites, which were these
Right.
major sites where major chemical releases were found. We have a number of them. We've talked about them on the episode. We have three that are right here in our backyards,
Yeah,
literally.
total six in Vermont. But we
Yeah,
can
and we can
mention.
literally hike to, I mean, the two of us can hike to two of them relatively easily.
Yeah, as the crow flies, it's probably like 3 miles from my house.
And then in 80s, the Reagan took office and put a woman named Ann Gorsuch in charge of the EPA and gutted it. They said it, they reduced the cases against corporations. They either stopped pursuing, canceled altogether, up to about it was like I think it was like 60% of the cases were dropped when she took office. They dropped the pesticide restrictions, so certain forever chemical pesticides were allowed to be used again. And then in turn hired industry executives and experts to serve in the positions. So they basically she put the industry The people in the industry in charge of the areas they are supposed to be regulating.
What? Reagan, Reagan, Reagan.
Oh, and then also very much mishandled the early establishment of Superfund sites, which is why you didn't see a lot of Superfund sites have anything done to them until like till the 90s.
Great.
Because thank goodness Bush was much more pro-environmental, or Bush
Bush,
one was.
yeah, Bush Senior, yeah.
And then, I mean, the big thing was that pushed the American public against what Reagan had done was actually the 85 Chernobyl disaster.
Really?
Yeah, that brought a lot of attention to the EPA because they basically were like, because they made the EPA was the only government agency established to quickly study and figure out and publish results on what the effect of the radioactive release would have on the American public, which then brought about the establishment of the Emergency Planning and Community Right to Know, which was a gathering and sharing of data of all toxic chemicals.
Okay.
And then we go into the we've talked about the next th thing before the 87 and the ozone hole, Montreal protocols and CFL cell else. So I even point on this one to like listen to the CFL episode.
Yeah, listen to the CFL episode. It's a really good one.
And then the early 90s saw the establishment of the Energy Star program, which at the early on and up until in 2010, it was a voluntary self-certifying program. So the government, so they basically found, and then in 2010, they found that the self-certification was fraught with abuse and people basically falsifying results. Point to like the major one was Volkswagen, which Volkswagen ended up having to pay $2 billion.
What episode did we talk about that on?
It was a recent one.
Yeah. It's, you know, not only am I getting like blurs between like talking to you and talking on the show, now I just like it's all one long episode in my mind too.
Yes.
Anyway.
Yep. And then so in 2011, the EPA basically set up third party testing. So third party laboratories and such would get certified by the EPA to then in turn test appliances and everything else to then get the Energy Star rating. And so recently we are seeing better results out of the Energy Star program.
Yeah, it's particularly impressive is dishwashers, the technology for dishwashers and water waste.
I look forward to upgrading my dishwasher because it is like one of mine is like my it's loud. It's angry. I know it's wasteful, but it's one of those like that's a $600-$700 purchase that.
Yeah. Yep. I am the dishwasher.
Yes, you're the hand dishwasher. I remember the era when I was that.
But we will in the summer, spring, summer, and fall, we do basin washing and dump the water out in the garden and stuff when it's favorable for the garden.
Soaking wet and swampy.
Yeah, and you know, there's not a bunch of like meat and oils and stuff in the in the water.
Yep.
So
we go into the After Energy Star, so both Bush and Clinton were both very big pro-environment. They worked to rebuild some of the damage done to the EPA. They established brownfield sites, which were like they were sub Superfund sites. So they were small, like single acre or less. I believe it's acre or less lots. Some maybe possibly bigger. Bigger or smaller, but it's very small sites that are damaged by either forever chemicals, oils, toxins, etc., that require some sort of remediation to be able to be sent back to the environment.
So maybe like a site where they crush cars or something like that.
Crush cars, yeah, that's a good one. Those end up using sometimes end up being Superfund sites because there's just so many. More like the gas stations that had the leaky gas tank.
Okay,
would be more of a brownfield.
Right. Okay. Yeah, that is such a huge undertaking. That's why you see so many gas stations not being repurposed because of the amount of money that goes into. Cleaning that up, and largely that is funded privately now.
Yes, it is funded privately, but there's been. I mean, that's another thing is that the EPA is they do fine companies, and sometimes the fines are painful, but they're never really like, hey, this company made $1 billion in profits, and you're fining them $90,000 a day.
Yeah.
When you have $1 billion of profits, that's nothing.
Yeah. Yeah, that's interest.
And the other thing is that also establishes they do fines by the day, month, repeat offenses, etc. And they do rack up. But the big one of the things is that there's a huge loophole is that because you do it by the day. So and then you my rooster just crowed out there. established is that when you get fined by the day, you only dump one day. Like you just build up the chemicals and then just do a big dump a day.
Right.
Or you get the other thing is the EPA, especially during the Bush Jr. eras, gave a lot of exemptions.
Okay. Just let like things slide.
One thing, yep. Like what? Nuclear power plants have exemptions from EPA regulations.
That blows my mind. And I think that came up when we were talking about nukes.
Yep. I mean, there is stuff that does get covered by the EPA and the nuclear watchdog agencies. And I can't remember what the name of that is. But yeah, like things like the release of the warm water from the chemical, from the nuclear fission reaction that they are allowed to release into the water as long as it's not too, too hot.
Yeah.
But it, like, they found testing like in the Connecticut River, and it was like, yeah, they're within the range of acceptable, but it's still within higher than what fish can really be comfortable with.
Okay. All right. What else?
And then 05, you have one of the big sore spots on the EPA was the mercury toxicity failures, where they found that like coal plants were repeatedly getting exemptions for their potash fields and whatnot, which are very rife with high levels of mercury. And they were finding that the potash fields and runoff from these plants was getting into the drinking water, causing high levels of mercury in drinking water.
Yes, which is so deadly.
Yes. And then they had 07. They brought case against the state of California and blocked California from passing their vehicle emission regulations. The states also in turn sued back, but ultimately failed. And eventually the EPA, I believe, said it was in... Where did it go? It was like it's in the last, like it was 2017, I think it was, that the EPA finally allowed California to set their own environmental regulations, which I believe go into effect this year or next year.
Okay. And exceed EPA standards.
By a lot. And that was what the EPA was. Because that's the EPA was why people were very much critical of the EPA for this move of blocking, because they felt that the regulations the EPA would eventually pass were very lenient to auto manufacturers, whereas California was going to be very stringent, and then a lot of other states have what are called piggyback laws. That basically says that if California passes this environmental regulation, we automatically adopt it in return. Vermont has one of the piggyback laws.
Okay.
So basically, if California passes it, we automatically adopt it within a certain time frame.
Okay, that's interesting.
Yep. And then a Bush... And under Obama as well, had found that so EPA managers, and this was found to be a lot of cases of these industry executives that were put in managerial positions in the EPA and never actually removed, that would in turn suppress studies on certain things on certain things that would make either government, corporations, or industry look bad, like the sea level rising. They found that the EPA suppressed and blocked studies on sea level rising. The second one was fracking. Like, we will never know the full damages of fracking because the EPA managers blocked the studies so hard.
The ghost of Reagan.
Yep. The ghost of Reagan. Yep. And yeah, and then Scott Pruitt was put in charge in 17, fought existing and new regulations. This is a 2017 was a Trump appointee,
right?
And then finally, under under Biden, the like they finally passed some forever chemical rules, but then also they found out that the managers had been suppressing studies and the results on forever chemicals since as early as 98.
Awesome. That is awesome.
Yep. And yeah, that they did finally pass the emissions controls on cars and trucks. We touched on this in our
small trucks. So yep.
The auto industry very much was like, oh, they killed the small trucks, and like, no, you just refused to make the combustion engine more efficient.
Yeah. Yup.
And then yeah. And it was 21 that California was allowed to officially pass their more stringent emission standards.
And as far as that goes in the small trucks episode and everything, I maybe it's just the algorithm, feeding me what it wants me to, what it thinks I want to see. But I'm seeing more and more people talking about a small, something just fell down somewhere. More talk of people wanting small trucks and why are these gone and I don't want this thing.
Look at the Maverick. The Maverick, even fraught with the issues that it has, and if you go to the Maverick subreddit, they're bad. They're in such high demand. Ford cannot keep up on the manufacture of these. Like every year they have to open up a basically lottery system where you put in bids and build the truck you want and then get to hope that Ford will build it. And like some people put orders in like 2021, 2022, and then still have not had their truck delivered.
This should, yeah. Well, anyway, we could do a follow-up on that, like, because...
Yes, and I mean, we could go back on to, like, a lot of the small truck one and the tax on imports, because this new Toyota truck that is going to be made overseas...
Right.
It would be amazing in the American market. The same thing with mini trucks. They would be great in the American market, but they're just so hard to get over here because the EPA has been pushed by auto manufacturers to over-regulate these vehicles.
Yes. Anyway, what else you got on the note page there?
So environmental justice.
Yes.
EPA failed repeatedly. Over and over and over and over and over and over, especially because of those periods where they were either A, gutted, or a major recent case that is it's going to have a ripple effect for decades, is the Supreme Court ruling that certain waterways are not covered by the Clean Water Act, which covers all waterways.
Right.
So now companies are using what they now see as a loophole of, well, we don't know for sure if this waterway is covered or not. Well, we're going to dump it in anyways, and you EPA people can figure it out later.
Yeah, and here in Vermont, the entire funding for environmental justice is $1.9 million, mm-hmm. which is not a lot of money.
No, it is not. And then there's a lot of push. We've talked about the global South, but also we have a degree of the global South in our country where the EPA has failed to hold companies accountable for high levels of polluting in poor/low income neighborhoods because they can't afford to fight back, so these companies take advantage of that and do excessive dumping in these areas, or they get these people to sign away their environmental rights so the company can pollute for a short-term gain for these individuals. So another one, one that's an ongoing fight that is right now the EPA is losing. There's this pebble mine in Alaska, And the court case going on right now is the Pebble Mine applied for a certain amount of environmental impact that they would have on this area. And the EPA basically said, we have veto rights over Alaska on this because this is going to have such a major environmental impact that it'll have it's like a 60% impact on the environment around the mine. And the court case right now is, does the EPA have the authority to preemptively say no to a project that will have a high environmental impact?
Well, it's called mitigation.
Yes. Well, nope. The courts right now are ruling in favor of the corporation, saying, no, the EPA only has authority to go after existing polluters, not the potential for a polluter.
I can't even fake surprise.
Yep. I got the Clean Water Act. The other one that is, we've talked about this as well, especially here in Vermont, big and small ag are almost completely exempt from environmental regulations.
Yeah, yeah. And we're going to be talking a little bit more about big ag next week. But yeah, that was very thorough history of the EPA there.
Yes.
Thank you.
And I mean, there's been some good stuff done under Biden, but unfortunately, under Reagan and then under Trump were the two probably the worst, or not sorry, not Reagan, Nixon.
Yeah,
no, it was Reagan. Sorry, I got him.
Reagan. They're just
Reagan. Reagan and Trump were probably they did so much damage. They cut the budget so much and put these managers in place that it's going to take a very long time for the EPA to even come close to recovering. And it doesn't help, unfortunately, that people like Biden are not taking these individuals out of their position of power.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, we've mentioned this before with Postmaster DeJoy and the Pajit, the head of the FCC, which I think he did finally get voted out. Biden was finally able to put, that's a different story, but where these bad actors put in by conservative presidents are not removed by the, in turn, moderate Democrats that come into office after them.
Yeah, with long-term goals that don't necessarily make rich people richer.
That's the EPA.
That's the EPA. It's rife with corruption. It's underfunded. Right. And when you get something like this that's underfunded, you're going to see more corruption because the right people aren't attracted to it because we say it all the time. It's a vicious circle. It is a
And then Biden, and then in the trillion-dollar package they passed a couple of years ago, the COVID relief, whatever one, injected about a couple billion, or I think it's $200 billion, or is that one $2 billion? I mean, maybe it was $2 billion. To injected $2 billion into the EPA to specifically address environmental justice of these low, poor income neighborhoods.
EPA. And this stuff's going to come up over and over again, people. Like, you know, take note. You're going to see this more and more in the news, especially over the coming months, I would hope.
I'd hope to see more positive stuff and not things like East Palestine, Ohio, where the EPA says it very much did you watch the recent episode of last week
with the trains?
Well, with Boeing. To find out, the EPA has a very similar set of managers and whatnot, where the regulators actually work for the rail companies or these chemical companies. And they found out that the regulator that was over East Palestine was actually on the rail company's payroll.
Yes. Yep. And there's nothing in place to keep that from happening.
Nope, absolutely nothing. At least, well, Boeing and the airline safety, that actually has been addressed at this point. They are now like no longer allowed. But then we had, I mean, there's another Boeing issue. Like I would,
We don't need to get sidetracked by that.
Sidetracked. Or did you hear what I also have to laugh about the Google thing that Google changed its the filter results that you can filter flights by what type of plane is now higher up on the page than it used to be after all these issues with Boeing. But hey,
I kind of like that.
Let's bring it back onto the homestead.
Let's talk about the homestead. Let's kind of, you know, it's spring. We've got a lot of irons in the fire and stuff, you know, starting seeds and struggling with that sometimes and things. But the one of, I think we should start here with Eric's got some of the realities of homesteading and supplying for yourself. If you want to tell us what happened, Eric.
Yes. So Friday I got home to one of my hens acting very strangely in my driveway. She was kind of like her head was scrunched back. She was kind of poofed up, and then I immediately noticed that she had prolapsed.
Yeah,
and I got her. I immediately
The cloaca was prolapsed.
Yes, the cloaca was prolapsed very badly, and so I immediately caught her, brought her inside, gave her I immediately went online and started researching everything possible that this could be. Remedies, etc. It ended up being a trifecta of things that without vet intervention, the probability of me saving her were very low. So she had prolapsed, but she had prolapsed because she had become bound with a soft-shelled egg, which is basically an egg that doesn't have, it's just the membrane. There's no shell, so there's nothing for her muscles to push out. And unfortunately, what happened with that is, like, it because then that part was on the outside, her muscles and current couldn't even push on that. I gave her soaks. I kept her. I did the best to keep her clean. I tried to push things back in. To little to no success. The stuff would almost immediately she would push it back out because she was just so bound up.
Right.
I tried to worry the soft egg out. I tried to get the cloaca open to try to get this egg out, and it proved it futile. Unfortunately, her energy steadily declined over the 2 days. To where this morning she was barely vocal. She was sitting where you knew it was uncomfortable for her to sit, but she was sitting anyways. So I got her comfortable. I gave her one last soak. You can tell she enjoyed the soak because she'd start cooing. Mm. And she actually, at one point she fell, last night she actually fell asleep in her soak. and then this morning I gave her her soak. I made her comfortable. I dried her off. I sprayed some antibacterial and stuff to try to make her her backside comfortable. I put her in a towel lined box, but it was just one of those. I knew she was going to pass this morning. And then about 30 minutes before we started recording, I went to check on her and she was gone.
Yeah. I'm sorry, buddy. It is an unfortunate reality of self-sufficiency,
it's unfortunate. It's one of those prevention. The big thing is making sure your birds are staying hydrated. Their calcium is high in their diet. Mm-hmm. And that's the big thing. Those are the two big things, and they have a good balanced diet. And that's I think that's a struggle for me right now, is because they're eating a lot of stuff on the yard right now.
Yeah, and there's really just isn't anything.
Their grain, so.
Yeah, there's just not enough bugs in the dirt and things like that right now. And some people, might think like, it's just a chicken. But like, first of all, like if you're not watching on YouTube, you could I like maybe I just know Eric well enough to tell that he is not very happy right now. This is not only a supplier of food and nutrition for he and his family.
It's a me well, I mean, it's the flock is a member of the family.
It's a part of the family. It's a part of the homestead. It's a part of the system. It's a part of the cycle of everything that happens at Eric's home. And to lose a member of that is difficult. And could this be happening on a, if he was more reliant on egg sales than he is currently, this would have an impact on his income. This could have an impact on other animals around too. You'll sometimes see that.
Yeah, and that's like because there is risk that it was, I mean, there is a small risk that it was a parasite or other thing that potentially caused this. That's why it becomes important that as soon as I identified the that there was a problem, to isolate and separate the bird in question. That was very key. Because also, chickens will quickly and easily cannibalize each other. They are horrible. They are horrible. They are stupid. They are disgusting. They will cannibalize. They did not get her, thank goodness. I got her early enough, but it is a risk. That's why it's very important to monitor your flock closely. Check on them every day, if not multiple times a day, because problems can arise and they can become very big very quick.
Well, and I'll say this, because this is that time of year, and if you are planning on getting chickens for the first time, which is an entry level animal for a lot of people, it's to kind of start getting into that cycle. Do your research, do the reading. This is so important. And if you have children to watch, have them have to watch an animal suffer and die, that's too much. Children are naturally curious and, often much more resilient, but it's unfair to not to to the animal and to everybody around it if you don't know what you're doing. So, it, read a book. Backyardchickens.com is really good
I
resource.
found a lot of when I like every time I put in a question into Google, backyard chickens was always one of the top results. And unfortunately, it was the same blog post every time. Every time I phrased the question differently, I got the same blog post. So it did get a little frustrating at points. But I did do a lot of research, and it was a trifecta of things that unfortunately just like that without that intervention, there was very little chance that me as a amateur chicken wrangler was going to be able to remedy. And I also, and with the kids, like I have teenagers who understand the cycle of life, and this is not the first flock we've lost. Or a member of the flock that we've lost. We lost the whole flock, my first flock to wildlife.
It's never, we've been through it, Meg and I, and it sucks. And I'm sorry, you've lost a bird. What was this bird's name?
Beardo.
Ah, weirdo.
Was one that she's one of those she's a dark mottled brown, but she had didn't have much of a crest. But had a feathery beard underneath her beak.
Some kind of Wyandotte, was it? Or
I'm not sure what breed my sister, as I said, these birds came from my sister. She might know, but I had two beardos. And this is the beardo with the bigger beard.
Well, I'm
But I have another beardo. She's a small she has a smaller beard, but is also a beardo.
okay. Well, I'm sorry, Eric. That sucks. And the
Yes, and
timing
it's one of
today.
those. It is sad. It's disappointing. And but I mean, I have more birds on the way because I have my babies growing up. Unfortunately, they're coming across as very roostery. lot of them.
Oh, yeah, I was going to ask you about that while we're on the subject, because you and I went back and forth on identifying roosters the other day and the
Yes, and I
different.
also went with our common friend Megan also. Look, we were trying to figure out like how to tell, and I also realized like at the age they were, it's like I don't care. Like I'll just wait till they get big enough to let me know for sure. Like it's fun to play the guesswork game, but at the same time, it's like I'm not gonna make a major effort to like go like one of the tests is like if you hold them by their feet upside down, hens will go forward, roosters will go backwards.
Now I learned the shadow hawk method, which is that you sort of bring your hand over the birds, and some birds will stand up to the shadow hawk, and other birds will run and cower, and that's sort of how you discern by behavior. I don't understand the science behind the upside down thing. Like, that just seems like an old wives' tale. Like, does it, have you had this to any success?
Yes.
Okay. I'll be trying it. I'll try it. But I've also I think the Shadow Hawk just makes sense.
Yep. I mean, there's other ways, like there's if you're really willing to handle them, the tail feathers and wing feathers, there's slight variations between the males and the females. And I can't remember, I mean, I gotta look, I'd have to look, double check what I'm not looking at my notes right now. But there's different ways. There's like finally there's a loud noise. Like if you do like a loud clap, the ones that respond with peeps are likely to be males, whereas the females are likely to be silent and cower.
Right, just like the Shadow Hawk.
Yes, just like the Shadow Hawk, it's a variation of the Shadow Hawk.
It's just the difference between a fight or flight sort of instinct that's built into all of us animals.
Yep.
We've got 2 weeks on our birds. We've got what, 11 chickens coming, and then a few weeks after that, we have six ducks coming. We're building
Nice.
structure for that right now. Been hitting that coal pile at Home Depot for cheap lumber. Highly recommend that if you do not go to the same Home Depot as me, because I need it. but looking for scraps of wood and doing things like that is huge. I've been making scrap wood bird houses, which has been really fun and really annoying to Meg, because I am like staring at this one birdhouse, because I was out doing errands yesterday, and she texts me that this bluebird is like checking it out, a male bluebird is checking it out. And I come back, and there he is. He's inspecting it. I went out there, and I put a little landing post, because I didn't do that. He seemed to be having a hard time wanting to get in and out of the birdhouse. So I put a little post in when he was off hunting, and this is the biggest bluebird I've ever seen. It really is. It's like, usually you think of a bluebird, you're thinking like 2 or 3 inches tall. This fella is standing up super straight, puffing out his chest. He's half a foot. He's a
Like Blue Jay sized.
not that big, but bigger than a chickadee. But smaller than, I don't know, a robin.
Yeah, no. I know the size ones you're talking about. They're about the size of like the red-winged blackbirds.
Really, really big fella. And now the female has been inspecting this particular scrap wood birdhouse that I made. So I think I'm gonna have like a front and center bluebird right out the picture window in the living room. I'm really excited about,
Nice.
because yeah, I'll be able to like see it. That's where I work out. And stuff like that. But spring is here. We're doing a lot of stuff. If you're watching on YouTube, you can see much more of my face. I have taken the first step towards summer and trimmed my beard down. Not quite as short as it will be in 2 months, but it is trimmed down. And I think I'm going to actually do my annual haircut this week. So I just buzz it, and then it just
Yeah,
grows.
I mean, I did mine this a few weeks ago, and I'm still hating it because
Yeah, you look
I have this like My barber who's at the salon I go to, like I was talking to him yesterday and he's like, "Have you turned 40 yet?" I'm like, "No, not yet." Like, you know, your hair, your cowlicks and stuff will change when you're 40. I'm just like, "Thanks, Mike."
Yes, you're looking a bit like a young hen at the moment.
Yes, my and I this thing, this is like even washed, like it's just like it's cowlicky. It's like it will not behave. Like I'm almost tempted to like I've never been, since I was in the Navy, I have never been tempted to fully shave my head as much as I am tempted to right now.
So, how are your seed starts doing?
They're doing really well. I have yellow tomatoes come up. I had orange tomatoes come up. I had my purple tomato come up, and I had my blue tomatoes come up, which blues are
Fantastic.
technically just more of like a purple. They're like indigo rose. They're very like, yeah, reddish, more of a reddish purple than a purple. But then I also did get from the actual laboratory that bred the purple tomato.
Right,
I
yeah.
bought seeds from them, and I mean, this is a actual like. It is a purple tomato. It has the same chemical that makes blueberries. So, such a superfood.
Oh, like an antioxidant sort of.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So, it's a very high. So, I'm really excited about these tomatoes because I am very. So, you, Mister, I don't understand a salsa of a particular color. I told our again, I told our mutual friend Megan about that. And she's like, "Oh my God, like Wizard of Oz, that's awesome." I'm like, "Yes, victory."
I Megan explained it to me. Meg explained it to me. I was never really a Wizard of Oz kid. I was reading adult books, I guess.
Well, see, I ended up watching the movie, so like, it was like, because that was one of those movies that was always on like CBS or whatever,
Right.
like. So I mean, it was one of those things like you could catch it like all the time, like
Yeah.
TNT, TBS, like they ran that thing till its death.
Yeah, I guess I never really engaged with it. Yeah, so all of our tomatoes are up. Peas are up. The brassicas that we've planted are up. So we've got some cauliflower, some broccoli. I can't remember if we did cabbage or not. Sweet Williams are up. Peppers are coming up like crazy. My early jalapenos are doing really well. I should see secondary leaves on those probably in the next week or so.
See, n only one of my Jedis have come up, and none of my orange or yellow jalapenos have come up yet, which is like I'm just so excited that I found these seeds of these like these are like these jalapenos are like yellow, and the orange ones are like orange, and like not just like, oh yeah, they're a greenish orange and such, and they'll fade to this. Like, no, these are like orange and yellow, and it's going to be, I'm very excited about mine.
I've got some very small, so my earlies are doing really well. Jedis, the rest of the Jedi's jalapenos should be coming up in the next day or two. Cayennes are starting to push up. The ahi mangoes are starting to push up. The one that's lacking for me right now is the serranos. Now those seeds might be a little too old. I got those in the last Reddit Secret Santa, so that they might be 3 years old at this point. So those seeds might be a little old. I might have to resow, but that's okay. You know, we deal with loss on the homestead in all sorts of different
Yes.
ways. But yeah, we're blazing ahead. We're just waiting for this weather to change.
Yeah, I keep having to repeat myself with different people in different places to go, do not be the fools that fell for it last year. Do not plant without protection before Memorial Day. Like if you're willing to go out every night and cover your plants and such, plant before Memorial Day. Have at it. But if you're just like, it's springtime, I'm gonna plant now, it's like, no, your plants are gonna die because May we get a frost.
So yeah, that's all happening. And then I guess just sort of wrapping up the show here. Broken Shovel is moving. We're doing lots of stuff. I really encourage, if you are a person who is on Facebook or Instagram, to look up Broken Shovel. We're doing lots of updates right now. Lots of our natural dye linens are coming to fruition. Of course, the brooms. I'm bottling hot sauces today. You'd have to visit me at a farmer's market to get that. But
Oh wait, did we announce your big exciting
no,
news?
no, I'm working my
Yes,
way
yeah, so
towards
let
it.
the
I'm working
York's.
my way towards it. You just simmer
Okay,
down,
okay,
man. Just simmer
okay.
down. But yeah, so Broken Shovel Farm, the endeavor of my wife Meg and I is kind of moving in leaps and bounds again this year. We take big steps every year. We will also we'll still be at the Chelsea Farmers Market. We are going to be at the brand new Verscher Market. But yeah, we got into one of the more exclusive farmers markets this year, which is Norwich, which is just it is a extremely well planned, extremely popular farmers market, and we're going
There's
to.
a ton of foot traffic that goes through the Norwich Farmers Market, especially in when the in the spring and summer, or in late summer, like when the college students are actually
Yeah.
around. And then you also have all the grad students, you get a lot of traffic from
It's
Hanover over there.
unbelievable. And we could not be more excited. I've gotten to know the market manager pretty well. She's been helping me with the Verscher market and, advice every once in a while. She's extremely well experienced and it's just we're just so lucky, and our first time, and obviously you're going to keep hearing this, but mark your calendars, because we would love to see folks that listen to the podcast that are local come out and visit. We will be there Mother's Day weekend at the Norwich Farmers Market, and as we get closer, I'll put up times and addresses and all of that stuff. But yeah, we couldn't be more excited. We're going to be there with just our brooms and our linens and our aprons and things like that. The hot sauces
Great for Mother's Day gifts.
great for Mother's Day gifts, right? Mother's Day week, it's the day before Mother's Day. So yeah, and just obviously check out our social media platforms to look at that. You could also look it up on we're also on TikTok, but that is a lot more videos about stuff we're doing here, but
Yeah,
projects and
and
stuff.
of course, but I mean, if things go.
Yeah, we might not be on TikTok anymore, right?
Yeah.
but yeah, we just couldn't be more excited. And it's everything Broken Shovel is at brokenshovel802.com. And I think next week I'd like to do a coupon code for people to get start getting excited for spring. So I'll work something up, a good discount for our listeners. Other than that, it's just go, and then wait until it warms up, and then go, and then warm up, and it's just an exciting, this is my favorite time of year. So,
I just had a thought. We should do with the amount. This will be a next year, and we should set up a seed swap in Berkshire too. Because with the amount of stuff that we grow lots of heirloom stuff. All
actually,
my
yeah.
peppers, all my tomatoes are all heirloom, and I have every intention of harvesting
A
seeds.
grant has been secured in Verscher. For a seed fund, I need to basically get in touch with that person for the Verscher market anyway. But it's the folks we got our cat from have secured a grant through the nonprofit organization that is helping me with the Verscher market. So that is extremely achievable. I would love to do that. I'm going to do my best to be boots on the ground involved in that as the person that's working at the farmers market. I think it's a no-brainer to get involved. And real quick, next week we're talking about regenerative agriculture, which is really just a big fancy word for doing stuff the old-fashioned way without involving Monsanto, by using heirloom seeds, collecting seeds and preserving seeds. We're going to talk about all this stuff
Ooh,
that Eric and I
I'm gonna.
do, and
I want to talk about. I know one of my things. I want to talk about the old Indian methods.
oh yes, the native methods.
Sorry, yes, you're correct. Say thank you for correcting the Native American
Yeah.
methods.
So we're going to talk about seed collection, seed saving, And steering away from chemicals and why we're steering away from chemicals and plastic and all of these things and why we do things what is known as the hard way.
Yeah, the hard way. Well, somebody was asking me about if I was ever going to build a greenhouse, and it's like, yeah, I am going to build a greenhouse, but I'm going to build it sustainably. It's like, oh yeah, you can build a cheap one with like PVC and plastic. I'm like, no, I don't want to do that.
No,
I want to build it with 2x4s and recycled windows.
I've been collecting windows for 3 years for this. So, yep. You know, this is, it's a long-term process, and that's something we're going to really get into next week. I think it's going to be a fun one because it's all about getting your hands dirty, and our hands are always dirty these days. You know, and yeah, I'm really excited for next week. And yeah, I think that's the episode. Ipa.
Yeah.
All right. See everybody next week.